Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Michael Lombardi was joined us previously. I'm actually rereading his book, Gridiron Genius. Of course, the beginning of the book talks about the beginning of his NFL career where he was working with Bill Walsh and was essentially his chauffeur. Of course, he worked with Bill Belichick as well. So he has a podcast, which I'd recommend to you. It's called GM Shuffle. By the way, our podcast, Doug Gottlieb Show, available every day after the show. And I have an all-basketball podcast called All Ball. My guest this week is Bo Ryan, legendary Hall of Fame coach at Wisconsin and Wisconsin-Platteville. He's my guest. You'll love the insight, I think, that he shares with us on All Ball. Anyway, GM Shuffle's the podcast. He was talking about the quarterback position. He was talking about Tua Tagovailoa, and it's not just the hip. Tua has a long history of injuries during his short period of time at Alabama. Take a listen.
It's not just his hip. It's his ankle. It's his wrist. He broke his wrist the first day of spring ball one year. And then they fixed it and he came back and he rebroke it again. I mean, he's brittle. He is brittle. You can't deny it.
Yeah, I don't know if he's brittle or if he's injury prone or what the... But, I mean, if you think of the parts of your body which individually, if they break down, it could be problematic, but explained. He had the multiple ankle injuries, right? They did that kind of quickie arthroscopic surgery thing on him as well to get him up and ready again. He had that done a couple times. So in and of itself, the ankle, problematic, but not the biggest deal in the world. You could make the parallel to Steph Curry. The wrist injury. All right, it's football, it's his wrist. He got it fixed. He seemed to throw the football fine. Didn't affect his accuracy or his arm strength, right? Then you have the hip, which is the most troubling, and he appears to have escaped long-term disability because of it, but we don't know. There's still one more checkup, and we don't know if and when it'll become arthritic at an earlier point in time. I mean, really, that's what happened to Todd Gurley. Like, Todd Gurley's demanding his payment, which he's owed by the Rams. But there's a couple things that led to Todd Gurley falling out of favor and ultimately being cut. You know, first it was his knee. Then it was his work ethic, attitude. And ultimately, the knee is arthritic. And so it's like you could put up with the attitude and some of the other stuff if you could depend on him every week, but you can't because of the arthritic knee. So we don't know that about Tua. But this is, look, there are no perfect prospects. Joe Burrow's a guy who... I mean, he didn't start for a couple, didn't play football essentially for a couple years. He did get hurt at Ohio State trying to win the starting job. Got hurt in fall practice. And as you could, everyone has a knock against them. Burrow's knock is, well, he's so good. Why wasn't he good his first 4 years in college? And oh, yeah, by the way, some arm strength stuff. But you're like, all right, considering the class of quarterbacks, and he is from Ohio, and the Bengals need a quarterback, and he was successful in spite of all of those things, ridiculously, maybe more successful statistically than anyone in the history of college football, you take him number one. Tua's deal is that it's widely known. Some people know even more. It's one of the things that I think initially you might have thought was working for him, right? Like doctors can't fine tooth comb. Now it's going to work against them. Obviously people are going to fly in their own doctors to check him out, to fine tooth comb him. But I don't think this is smokescreen. I don't think it's anybody putting something out through Lombardi that they want out there in order to hurt his stock. I just think Michael Lombardi's telling you what everybody in the league knows, and somebody's going to have to kind of hold their nose and go, God, I hope he doesn't get hurt. You can tell me that you wouldn't draft Tua because of the injury history. It's okay. You can tell me that. What I would tell you is this. Have you thought about buying you ever seen one of those Jags drive down the street? Jaguar? Like, man, that thing is cool. Or Maserati. I'm not sure what they do with the exhaust of a Maserati, but it, I mean, it actually turns me on. You know, that's you hear it and you're like, I'm not into exhausts of cars. Oh, wait, what? If Maserati is driving down the street, it's amazing. But everything costs more with a Maserati, right? And it's in the shop a bunch. But are you willing to take that risk? You know, the famous story is Pat Mahomes had injuries, had, you know, there were meetings that he missed. There was some partying that took place. They didn't win a ton of games when he's at Texas Tech. His footwork wasn't great. And so the Chicago Bears traded up to get a quarterback. And they're like, you know, Mitchell Trubisky only started 1 year. I think 14 games he played at North Carolina. But Trubisky's ceiling may be lower than Mahomes, but his floor is higher. And therein lies kind of the rub in the draft. These are not secrets. These are not state held. No one knows. Nah, if you're going to be drafted a quarterback, especially coming off a debilitating hip injury, everyone's going to know your complete and total injury history. So if Tua sits longer than you thought in his virtual draft room, you'll know why. And if he gets picked by the Chargers, if the Raiders, if they trade up to get him, if the Dolphins, like, why did the Dolphins lust over Tua and then all of a sudden they're off the Tua bandwagon? This is an explanation as to why. They've been in quarterback purgatory for over 25 years. Right? Do you think they're going to put all their eggs into Tua when Tua appears to be like one sneeze away from being hurt again? You know, look, I get it. He's a pocket quarterback, but maybe the most troubling part about Tua, and I like him, is, you know, not just that he's smallish, not just that he's left-handed, or he comes from Alabama that hasn't produced a star quarterback. Granted, he's been far and away their best of the quarterbacks. But forget about all of that, and just remember this. All of these injuries are because he's gotten tackled, because he's gotten hit. You want to think he's Russell Wilson, but no one ever has caught Russell Wilson or hit Russell Wilson in the pros. This is if they catch you in college, what are they going to do in the pros? So Tua becomes the most interesting guy in this draft. Does he sit and wait? Does he go as early as 2 or at 3? Somebody trade up with the Skins. Somebody trade up with the Lions. The guy who was the number one prospect on everyone's board coming into the year. Now these people scratching their head going, are you going to do it? I don't know. I don't know why I can do it. Depends on how long a rope I have. How much do I play him? How do I? It. Man, you got to know there are certain things that guys don't do well. And right now with Tua, staying healthy is something he doesn't do well. And the expression in the NFL is availability is all about, is a good part of your ability. And no, he hasn't missed a ton of football. But he also hasn't played a full season of football. And we're talking college, not pros, where you don't get faster, everybody else does.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Jordan's stats can never equate to LeBron's because three-pointer wasn't as much part of basketball, didn't play as many years, took years off, you know, took a year and a half off, played 3 years of college. Like, there's a bunch of pace of the game wasn't the same. The rules of the game wasn't the same. And we hadn't seen him. If you saw Michael Jordan, you're like, look, LeBron's great, but that guy was more dominant in his era. So had LeBron won a championship and then the Jordan documentary came out, I think the conversation might be more even. But much like LeBron benefited from playing and Jordan not playing and people forgetting, people suddenly remembering, think of every documentary you've seen about every athlete and you immediately think they're better than they were. Right? You go back and you, like, you watch that Rose Bowl game, SC Texas. And, you know, immediately you're like, dude, I forgot how much of a beast Vince Young was. And you have people who will come back and go like, yeah, the Titans used him wrong. We had somebody on that said, yeah, the Titans used him wrong. Like, no, they didn't. Vince Young had a terrible throwing motion, couldn't read a defense, you know, bad off-the-field habits. wasn't an NFL quarterback. He just wasn't. He was a great college quarterback. But because you saw the game and saw how amazing he was against USC, you're like, the Titans had to screw it up. You completely change history. When you see Jordan play, you're going to be like, oh my God, I forgot how incredible he was. There's never a basketball court that he stepped on that he wasn't the best player. He might not have had the best game, but there's never a court that we didn't step on that he wasn't the best player. And how it ends, how it concludes, making two free throws, then making a driving finish, then getting a steal, then hitting the game-winning jump shot to win an NBA championship. Like I feel like LeBron is going to lose without ever lacing him up.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
He was a brilliant football player. Now he's a brilliant surgeon. He's Dr. Myron Roll. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Dr. Roll, where are you right now?
I'm in Boston, in my apartment downtown.
So what is work like for you?
So it's hectic. I'm coming off a 24-hour shift, so trying to get a little bit of rest. It's a time right now where it's very intense, and our hospital is certainly being tried and challenged on many different fronts. As neurosurgeons, you know, we typically are operating on the brain and spine, but we're having to be asked to redeploy and repurpose ourselves to help in this COVID-19 fight. Our floor has been transformed to COVID-19 only floors, and our operating rooms have slowed down. Our elective cases have been canceled, and our outpatient clinic visits have been done virtually now, where we call our patients with their scan results and maybe the new time where we may operate on their brain and spine in the future. So definitely something that I wasn't used to, or we're all not used to as surgical residents, but we just have to join in this fight because the influx of patients in Boston has been high, and it's going to get even worse probably within the next week or two.
There have been, again, and this is, I'm in Southern California, and we're still kind of bracing for what we're told is our wave of being the worst, but we've also been told that it appears that social distancing is working statistically. First, let me start with this. When, in the medical field, it feels like you guys were ahead of us. Like, when did you know about COVID-19 and the possibility of it becoming a pandemic?
So we knew about it probably a couple months ago, and we knew that it was serious, at that point. But I don't think we knew that it was going to hit home as hard as it did probably until a couple weeks ago when our hospital started making these institutional-wide changes to policies and procedures where everyone has to wear a mask and no visitors are allowed anymore. And you know, we have this surge clinic, this hospital within a hospital clinic where we take these patients off the street who have COVID-19 or symptoms analogous to it. You know, these sort of changes, stopping travel by employees through our institution, these things were sort of done. So we said, wow, this is becoming real. You know, Boston is going to become a hub. There was a conference that was held in Boston where a lot of international players were there. And so they think that may have been one of the reasons why Boston was hit so hard, because they were coming from Europe, they were coming from other parts of the world, and just not sure if the disease was spread at that point. And we're seeing the numbers be staggering. We've seen the numbers of people in our emergency departments, in our ICUs, using oxygen supports. We've transferred some of our pediatric patients to our local children's hospital to free up those pediatric ICUs as now adult ICUs to take care of these patients. So it's been an aggressive policy change and switch and adaptation by our hospital and the employees to try to fight this.
You mentioned about how you guys are doing visits virtually now, outpatient visits virtually. Is there something that you're doing now as a neurosurgeon? Dr. Myron Roll joining us, former star football player, of course, Rhodes Scholar at Florida State, and then played in the NFL and now working in Boston as a neurosurgeon. Is there something, I don't know if it's a positive or something, you know what, we didn't try this before, but because we had to, we're doing it, and we're going to carry it on maybe into the future?
So I'd say that it's pretty much just standard care right now to provide the oxygen support and the kind of pulmonary optimization that's needed for this type of virus. What we do know about coronavirus is that It has a propensity for hitting the angiotensin converting enzyme spaces in the body. This is a fancy way of saying it likes to hit the alveoli of the lungs, sit there, incubate for a while, and then it may quickly and sharply decompensate a patient, especially if you have premorbid conditions or you're a bit older and you don't have the functional reserve to sort of fight off and ward off this infection. And so in that respect, since we know a little bit more about it, we know the timeline, we try to get really out ahead of making sure that these patients have oxygen supplementation, making sure that, you know, if we have to flip them prone in order to expand their lungs even more, we do that. If we have to get infectious disease to get the proper scans, CTs of the chest, the chest x-rays, different labs, the test, we're doing these things. And for us as neurosurgeons, right, I mean, it's not something that we typically do, but we have to learn expeditiously, and the learning curve is steep. But we're a teaching hospital at baseline, so we have our medical doctors and our infectious disease doctors helping us through this and helping us try to be valuable members to the fight.
Dr. Myron Roll joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. You know how athletes are. They've heard from a doctor, I'm sure, told you when you're in high school and you sprained an ankle, hey, man, you got to be off this for a month. And you're like, okay, doc, but I'm an athlete. I'm back in a week, right? And doctors and scientists are being very, very cautious about gathering, working out. Meanwhile, many guys who are like you are in colleges, high schools, pros, whatever. They're like, look, I got to go work out. I got to do my thing. There's these speakeasy gyms around the country where people, you know, find a way to get their work in. As a former star athlete, but now a neurosurgeon that knows 10 times more than the common man, how would you approach trying to stay in shape during these times of quarantine?
Yeah, that's a great question, because you have two things going on. One, you have these people who know that the window of opportunity is so fleeting and transient that if you don't strike now while you're in optimal shape and you know you're young and you're healthy and you can get after it, then you may not have that chance again. I certainly realized that kind of coming out of my late 20s to say, well, you know what, it's time to move into medicine and go on to something that I can have a valuable contribution to the society once football is done. But then I also realized, as a medical professional, putting on my hat as a scientist for a second, that social distancing and physical distancing is real, and it's important for this sort of infectious disease, and not just the airborne and droplet sort of precautions, but the contact precautions too. You know, this disease has an envelope, a membrane around it that sort of sits on surfaces, and so if you're using one that of somebody who has touched it, who's infected, you could be contracting this disease and you don't even know it. So I say just to be incredibly smart, be very, very smart, be very careful in this moment, because if you're trying to get ahead and trying to get the work, great. But if you do it at the expense of your own health, that may set you back even farther. So it's a balancing act for sure. But I believe that physical distancing, limiting the amount of people that are around, limiting the amount of people that are using the same material, same machines, the same materials, the same benches or whatever the case may be, keeping that at a very, very minimum.
Dr. Myron Roll joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Again, I know you're not an infectious disease specialist. I completely understand that's not, you're a brain surgeon, a neurosurgeon. But I do wonder, like, the signs of optimism, the signs that we are flattening the curve, if you will. It leads to us thinking, hey, I know that right now everything, life is shut down, but maybe we'll be back online sooner rather than later. How would you describe, if I'm in California, I'm optimistic that, I don't know, May 1st seems like a possibility for life getting back to some sort of relative new normal. Is that a crazy thought? Should we still be, like, where should we be thinking?
I don't think that's a crazy thought, but I think that, once you see some progress, you want to stay at it, stay at the behavior modifications and the adjustments you've made to get to that progress. I liken it to, somebody who's been operated on with their spine, right? You get through a hard spine surgery, you stabilize the spine, you take off the compression that they were having on their neural elements, and they start to feel, pretty good the first day or two. I didn't feel like this before, I was in so much pain, now I'm not. And they go out and try to run a marathon the first day,
right,
seeing their progress. Then they get set back again because they just were so excited that things were moving in the right direction. It's about being patient, about getting comfortable, being uncomfortable, and allowing us time to continue to work through this, because there's a lot of different trial and experimental therapies that are kind of going on and being tested at the moment. And we have to make sure those are safe and efficacious for everyone. But in order for us to do that continuously, we need to still, even now, as it looks better or looks brighter from the numbers and the stats, we still need to adhere to the social distancing and our part as just a normal citizenry around the country and around the world.
Did you just use efficacious? That was amazing. You just used efficacious. I actually know what it means, and I've never heard the word used in a sentence before. But I got it. It's funny. You're bringing. I had played with a guy named Gary Bell. I played at Notre Dame my first year, and then Oklahoma State my next three. And Gary Bell was really highly touted kid, 6'5" lefty from Joliet, Illinois, had back surgery, and then his first day back, when he's cleared from back surgery, he's windmill dunking, he's doing all this stuff, and sure enough, the next day he missed practice because he's like, man, my back is tight. I felt so good because I'd been unable to do something for so incredibly long. All right, here's the thing. We're all in our homes. I have a family, three kids, so we go on walks. We're having family dinners. Like there's a lot of obviously bad, and the deaths are and the sickness is scary and super, super sad. For those of us who are not sick and we're under quarantine, you're trying to take away the positives, right? There's in California, there's no smog, right? No traffic. And we're getting to actually have conversations with our family members. As a neurosurgeon though, like you just got off a 24-hour shift, you get time to kind of catch up. Have you been able to slow down at all during quarantine?
I haven't. I just actually, Doug, to be completely honest with you, I got married 4 months ago. My wife's a pediatric dentist, and I actually sent her down to Georgia to be with her family because I didn't want to come home and infect her with anything that I was carrying from the hospital. She's staying away from her clinics right now. So it's literally just coming home, FaceTiming her, talking to my other family in the Bahamas, making sure that everyone's okay, and then trying to get back in the fight, head down and go full speed ahead. It's tiring for sure. It's taxing mentally and draining a little bit, but ultimately this is what I signed up to do and want to do with my life. As I mentioned, I'm from the Bahamas, and when Hurricane Dorian hit our home country, I'm not an emergency response physician. I don't know how to test cholera in water. I don't know how to avoid, stepping on nails so I don't have tetanus, but I went down and used my skills to help my country. And so same thing, if there's a need and there's vulnerable people around, I just want to be able to do my part. And even though we're not doing brain surgeries right now, anything that I can do or my colleagues can do, we're up for it because we just want to get this back to normal and have more of those great moments that you're mentioning that people are sort of enjoying and want to get back to their normal day-to-day life.
Yeah, I do feel like we're going to come out of this thing and we're going to appreciate doctors, scientists, nurses, those of us who are trying, we got to homeschool kids, you appreciate your teachers more. Each other more. Like, again, there's a lot of really sad stories, but there's going to be some good come from it. Myron, you do an amazing job. Thanks so much for teaching me how to use efficacious in a sentence. I'm going to copy that. You can trademark it if you want, and get some rest. Keep up the good work, and hope your wife's doing well with her family down in Georgia.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate you very much, man. Thanks.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
The idea that we're one judging Bill Belichick on Cleveland, okay? And like, well, on Cleveland. And okay, he was in Cleveland. It should be pointed out that in 94, his fourth season in Cleveland, he did win 11 games. So the idea is, one, you give him a decent quarterback and he's going to give you more than decent, more than a decent team. Like an 11-win team was pretty fantastic. And then Vinny regressed in his last year and they got fired. Here's the misconception, though, that people have. If Bill Belichick didn't have Tom Brady, he'd have a better quarterback than Geno Smith. Didn't he just draft Jimmy Garoppolo? Didn't he have Jacoby Brissett? I mean, Matt Castle didn't start a game in college. Won 11 games. Granted, there was a fall off from 16 wins the year before, but he still won 11 games with a guy that didn't win anywhere else that he went, Matt Castle. And like, look, the point is, like, if we would all agree that there would be a drop-off if you have the greatest quarterback of all time, but you're not going to replace him with Geno Smith. And look, what Rex Ryan is saying is, I did a hell of a job coaching considering I had Geno Smith. And you know what? Rex is right. And you know what? Bill Belichick wouldn't have won a Super Bowl with Geno Smith. And you know what? He wouldn't have drafted Geno Smith because he's not stupid enough to read those scouting reports and go like, you know what? I can fix him. If Bill Belichick didn't have Tom Brady, who he didn't draft until the sixth round. Like, let's not act like Bill Belichick had some secret that he knew. He got, I got this guy and passed him over five other times, as did everybody else in the NFL. The Eagles not only took Carson Wentz, but they had Sam Bradford. They had a backup quarterback. They still had to move mountains to trade up and get Carson Wentz out of North Dakota State, who had been injured in college and hadn't played a ton. That took some balls, right? That took some, this guy, we know this guy is the guy. They knew he was the guy. Belichick, it was a six-round pick. But there's 2 points here. One, yes, if he didn't have the greatest quarterback of all time, he wouldn't have been as good. But two, he also wouldn't have had Geno Smith because he's not an idiot. And I don't think Rex Ryan is an idiot, but their football, their evaluation and drafting, and Rex was drafting at the time, took Geno, who was supposed to, oh, we got him in the second round. He could have been a first round pick. Dude, he's exactly, and Geno, from the people I talked to with the Chargers when he was a backup, before Tyrod Taylor, like, they were like, you know what? He has maturity. They had good reports when he was with the Giants. But, I mean, look, the Jets and Jets fans, they hated him. The Giants, I mean, he got their whole staff fired because when they chose to sit Eli, they had to start Geno for a game, and that didn't go over well. And then when he got to the Chargers with all that experience, when he did play in the pre, it was bad. He can't play football. My point is twofold. One, we do this all the time. This is a bad argument, which is if you didn't have him, his backup would be playing. Like, no, that's not the way it works. And if we think Bill Belichick is a pretty smart guy, and though he hasn't always evaluated the quarterback position perfectly, right? There was the Ryan Mallett. Oh, Ryan Mallett was a mess. That one was a mis-eval by Bill O'Brien, who was the quarterback coach at the time and took Ryan Mallett with him to Houston. That was a mis-eval. But for the most part, they've evaluated quarterbacks pretty well. The argument that Bill Belichick wouldn't be Bill Belichick if he didn't have Brady because he'd have a Geno Smith type is pretty obtuse to the fact that you were the guy who took Geno Smith when everybody told you that guy was going to flop in the NFL. I don't mind what he said about Geno. Geno might not like it. Geno won him eight games 1 year, whatever. I mean, Rex Ryan getting to two AFC championship games with Mark Sanchez, who was very limited at the time, shows I think Rex Ryan was a really good coach when he had the right personnel and they could go ground and pound, and his defense was really good. But, you know, we want to take shots at Rex Ryan. We can say, why didn't it work out in Buffalo?